On today's episode of Hoops 360, Golden State Valkyries president Jess Smith joins the show. We discuss if the Valkyries can keep their momentum going after a historic inaugural season. Plus, as WNBA free agency moves shake out, why is Natasha Cloud still unsigned? Keep it right here. What is up, everybody? Welcome into Hoops 360. On today's edition of the show, the Golden State Valkyries had a historic inaugural season. What have they done this past offseason to give us confidence that they can follow that up with just another successful year in year two? But don't hear it from us. Hear it from the source, president of the Valkyries herself, Jess Smith, joins the show to give us some behind the scenes on how the Valkyries came to be in the roster construction for year two. Plus, a quick update on free agency. Where do things stand between Natasha Cloud and the rest of the W? Where will she land? Let's get into it. She is Cassandra Negley. I am Caroline Fenton. Cass, it's been a minute.
I know. It's been like weeks.
It's been months. Months, even. It's been years.
Entire lifetimes have gone by. 84 years. In dog years.
It has been 84 years in dog years. At least that's what it feels like. But happy to be back and happy that we are on the precipice of yet another season in the WNBA. Just a heads up to everybody listening, we're going to have a full season preview on next week's edition of the show. So who we thought had a great offseason, who we still have some questions about, our finals picks, some preseason picks, all of that coming up next week. But to kick things off this week, we're going to talk about a team that's only in their second year in the league, and that is the Golden State Valkyries, who have really kind of developed the blueprint for these new expansion teams and how they can start off and the history of their teams and their franchises and how to start off on a good note. Last year, the team set the WNBA expansion record with 23 wins and became the first ever expansion team in the W to clinch a playoff spot in their inaugural season. They set attendance records. They sold out all of their home and regular postseason games. I mean, they really became one of the more intimidating places to play in the WNBA. Cass, can year two in Golden State live up to their inaugural season?
I don't know if anything will live up to their inaugural season. I think that's always going to be very special. But in terms of everything you just said, yes. Like, short answer, yes. I think I was most impressed with their signing of Gabby Williams. You know, when we were talking about them last year, they had their own expansion draft, very international heavy, obviously. Had the collegiate draft, signed a few free agents, but just weren't splashy in that period. And it felt like maybe players were trying to see what exactly the Valkyries were about. So now they come into this year and they have Gabby Williams sign with them, which is a huge name. It feels like their big time, their first big time free agent. And when she spoke about it, she said it was three things. And I think it speaks to what the Valkyries wanted to build to have this success. She said, you know, where am I going to win? Where am I going to be part of a winning culture? And then just the culture off the court. And you mentioned attendance, like an incredible place to play. I also think Gabby Williams, her defensive tenacity is going to fit in perfectly with this team. It's really just the offense that we're looking at. And then you look at Kia Stokes, who won championships with Natalie Nakase in Las Vegas, knows how to win, isn't going to probably pour in points, but has that mentality and has that relationship with Natalie. And I think those are two very big building blocks they add this year to make them look good in the second year.
Adding Ashlyn Jackson through the drafts, Marta Suarez through the draft. And of course, you know, we look at Golden State and that kind of a funky draft, initially drafted Flage and then an immediate trade with the Seattle Storm, sending Flage to Seattle and then Marta Suarez to the Golden State Valkyries. And we're talking about Marta Suarez that adds size to this Golden State Valkyries team. She's somebody who's very familiar with the Bay Area. She was drafted out of TCU, but spent several years prior to that at Cal. So it makes sense. It feels like whenever I see the Valkyries either make a signing or their draftees from this past year, it feels like the Valkyries have this team identity and have this Valkyries DNA. And the moves that they make, it fits that. And that is incredibly satisfying to watch them kind of build their team that way. But to your point, what the Valkyries did in year one, we should put that away and put that on a shelf and memorialize that and remember that for how exciting that it was. Part of what made that season so special was that none of us expected them to do anything. Like, we got up on the show, we were talking about how, like, man, where's that superstar? Where is that player that's going to sell tickets? Who's going to be your go-to scorer when your backs are against the wall? Like, who's going to really bail you out? But they were able to do what none of us thought, at least I can speak for myself, I don't think they're going to get close to doing based on their roster, but massively overachieved. So it feels like in year two, they have that culture. They have their identity. They're adding some superstar players, and they're just building upon the special year one that they had.
Yeah, they really sold that idea that kind of goes against what we've been talking about recently, that you need superstars to market a team and market a league. Mm-hmm. They didn't have that really at all. They kind of had some names you didn't really know where they were going to go. Veronica Burton, most improved player, like, who thought going into year two, you were going to be super excited to bring her back? Caitlin Chen, third rounder out of the crowd of the draft, you know, she's coming back fighting for a second point guard spot there. Like, they built what they did out of true excitement for women's basketball in the Bay. And now it's time to just not piecemeal, but like fit in the puzzle pieces, because they do have that expectation of a championship in the first 5 years. It's year two, you know? So you've got four more years, including this season, to keep tinkering with that. And we know from past championships in other places that it does sometimes just take that one by one by one, off-season by off-season growth. And so to see what they can do in their sophomore season with these pieces will tell us a lot about the next 3 years.
That's the beautiful thing about year one. You're playing with house money. Anything that you do above expectation is just, you know, you're deserving of all of the flowers. That doesn't last forever. That kind of new shiny toy that, hey, this, we're just going out there, we're just going to have some fun, we're just trying to, you know, build a brand and build a fan base, that doesn't last forever. And that is, I think, a privilege, because they are now living to the standard that they set themselves. So in year two, falling short of the postseason isn't going to be good enough.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, the noise from the outside now becomes more serious, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the first year, it's all fun and games. We finally have a team in the Bay. The WNBA finally has an expansion team, the first of, you know, however many coming in by the end of the decade. Well, now, and you saw this on draft night, I think, there's going to be expectations, not of only what they can do, but how they handle what they do. You mentioned the Flage trade, and it feels like a long time ago now because things are moving so quickly. But how that was handled on draft night, I think, really points to this outside expectation of having answers, of wanting to know why you picked this player versus this player, how it fits, what makes sense. You know, the thing we're going to look at the Valkyries at over the next week and a half, which is absolutely crazy, is who they keep on their roster and who they do not, who sits in those development spots that are new to the W this year, and who just misses the cut. You know, those decisions are going to be the interesting ones before we even play games.
Do you think the Valkyrie's success, not just financial success or attendance success, but on the court success, adds a level of pressure to Portland and Toronto?
I mean, probably. Right? Like, maybe they don't think of it that way, but you don't want to falter in any way after seeing what expansion can be in the W and all the excitement around it. You know, I think there are going to be a lot of people looking at those two franchises and saying, well, Golden State did this, why can't you? Golden State sold out, why aren't we doing that here? I do think, though, there has to be a healthy understanding here. Like, the big thing I'll point out is Golden State was the first expansion team since 2008. People have been clamoring for expansion for years. Like, that was the question to Kathy Engelbert since she took over in the end of 2019, was when is expansion going to happen? I think Toronto has a leg up. They are Canada's team. They're going to play in a few different places. They have Sandy Brondello, big name. They have some other big names on their roster. Marina Mabry is always a fan favorite. She just had a great time at Unrivaled. I think maybe you look at Portland, and that's where you wonder, if they come up short, what will the critiques be?
It's almost like if you have three kids, and the oldest of your kids is
I'm
like,
one of three.
Where are you? Where's your birth order?
You go first. I want to see if, like, I'm the example that you're giving.
Like, the oldest child is like so smart, so successful, good at sports, sets the bar high. Everybody loves them. And then you have...
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, I love you. That's all that matters.
Okay.
And then like your next two kids, it's like, oh, well, everybody's always comparing me to my oldest sibling. Like, but they're so perfect and they're so great. There's no way that I could live up to that. It's an unfair thing to put on anybody. Like, you can't expect that your middle and your youngest child is going to do the exact same thing that your oldest child did, especially when conditions are different. I do think that Toronto and Portland both have the advantage of being in markets that are basketball markets, markets that are very positive for women's sports. We've seen that with the Portland Thorns. The sports bra in Portland is always pop in. Like, there is a need and there is a want, there's a desire for women's sports in Portland. That's one kind of barrier that I think has been broken down. But besides that, like, it's up to those respective franchises of who you bring into the building and how you go about your business. Like, we can't, of course, we want that for both of these expansion teams, especially when we're looking down the barrel at even more expansion in the WNBA. We want all of those expansion teams to be as successful, if not even more, than the Golden State Valkyries. But for that to be the expectation, I think is unfair.
Yeah, that's high. Wait, where are you in the birth order? Clearly, I'm the oldest.
I'm the youngest of two.
Oh, I was going to say youngest. Oh, so it doesn't really count as much.
Do I give off youngest child energy?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's okay.
You didn't give off oldest child energy.
No. But I think me and my older sister, I think there's always a different dynamic with two versus three.
There is. Because
three, you're always going to have an odd man out.
Yeah.
But like with me and my older sister, like she is the oldest sister and I am the younger sister. Like we are the stereotype.
Yeah. To continue this comparison though, odd man out is Golden State. Like they're kind of on their own here, bubbling around. At least Portland and Toronto have each other, you know? I don't know what that looks like, but they have each other.
And they'll be compared to not just Golden State, but to each other. It's like twins.
Yeah.
There's always going to be the smart twin. There's always going to be the athletic twin. Like, if Portland makes the postseason and Toronto doesn't, it's like, well, where did Toronto go wrong? Like, they are going to be compared to one another, which, again, is an unfair comparison, but also something that's inevitable. And it's also, like, just because Golden State had such a successful year one, and I think they're in great hands under the tutelage of Natalie Nicasse and that leadership. But we know that progress in life and sports in general, it is not standard. Like, it is not just like, oh, Golden State did this in year one, so now we can expect even more in year two. Like, this is still a team in its infancy.
Also, while we're on the topic of all of these differences, like, Golden State was on its own in an expansion draft doing its own thing. Toronto and Portland had to kind of compete with each other in a year when most of the league was not signed to contracts. And I think that made things kind of messy. So it's a good thing to point out right here and right now before the season starts, like the conditions are not the same. Like it is, you know, we talked like the other day, like to have that much success as an expansion team, that is not the standard. Like that's almost an outlier. And so maybe like to go all the way back, maybe they do take a step back. It's like the first pancake. Like, no, it's not the first pancake. Sometimes you have success like right out of the gate and then you screw up the next time. Like that's my thing. Not to say that they'll screw up, but maybe they won't be as successful.
But we see that with individual players too. Maybe they have a standout rookie season and then they're we call it the sophomore slump. For a reason. Like, I'm not saying I expect this from the Valkyries, but success is never linear. Mm-mm. And just because you have one standout year as an individual or as a franchise does not mean that you're only going to continue to build. Now, on the business side of things, I think that's different versus the basketball side of things. And also, Portland and Toronto have had the misfortune of stepping into an offseason that has been, fair to say, the most tumultuous in the history of the WNBA. It wasn't that long ago you and I were talking about like, hey, if they can't sign the CBA, then like how are Portland and Toronto expected to sell tickets and to build the foundation for their brand? Obviously, all of that is behind us. And that feels like a long time ago. Man. We've lived a lot of lives since then. But still, I mean, there hasn't just been a question mark of like, who are we? What does our first season look like? Who's playing on our team? It's also been like, hey, are we having a season? Like, how much money do we have available to spend? So all of that being said, at least from the signings and the drafting from the Golden State Valkyries, the strong foundation, business and basketball that they've built in year one, high hopes and high expectations for this Valkyries team. And I would say high expectations for this team is best case scenario, because that means they set the standard pretty high in just its first couple of years in its existence. Any last thoughts on the Valkyries before we hear from Jess Smith?
No. Excited to see that Violet back out there.
Me too. Right. It's so pretty.
Do you think they'll have like branding. another like egg? Maybe Violet Ooh. Has a friend.
Oh my gosh, Violet's getting a little sister.
I don't think Jess will tell us if they are.
Well, let's find out. We'll hear from Golden State President Jess Smith, who joins the show coming up next here on Hoops 360. We are overjoyed to welcome in here on Hoops 360 the president of one of, if not the most successful inaugural franchises in sports history, the Golden State Valkyries, and their president, Jess Smith. Jess, appreciate your time and for joining us today. I want to touch on exactly that. I mean, the Golden State Valkyries were successful by just about every single metric in its inaugural season, making the playoffs, selling out tickets. It was a business success. It was a basketball success. How do you double down on that, not just recreate the success in year two, but build upon it in year two?
That's exactly right. Women's sports, as we know, is continually on the rise. You know, I think what we just saw in the success of the CBA with the players in the league is making sure that they're planning for that. If you look back 5 years and you're trying to look forward 5 years, everyone understands that it's hard to see how quickly the growth, you know, has been coming and how much more there is to go. For us, from day one, we've always known building this team is bigger than Golden State, but that our success and what we could show is what's possible is not only reflective of the Bay, but reflective of the strength of the fandom that is out there and ready to come into the WNBA. And when I sat down with our incredible general manager, Ohemma, and head coach, Natalie, you know, what's been really special about this experience is that all of us were first-time leaders. We were storied number twos at other organizations, but we had a chance to lock arms and really build something that we thought was connective between business and basketball that we think everyone could really feel, you know, whether it was the fans to the players or people watching our games and understanding the power of that. And as we thought of what does this mean moving into 2026, the answer was yes and, right? So we built an incredible foundation. We had 10,000 season ticket holders last year. We actually just announced that we have over 12,000. We currently have a wait list moving into this year. And we want more of that. You know, we view it as our job to create the best fan experience, the best community, and certainly a winning product. My job and my promise to Ohemma and Natalie is to create the best home court advantage they've ever seen. You know, so for us, you know, for this year, that's really where we got to, you know, with our theme of this year, which is this is Valhalla. It's not just in the arena, it's in the community, you know, it's with each other, you know, it's wherever you gather in the mentality that you have.
You mentioned the CBA. That is the biggest news in women's sports this year. It's changed so much about the W, yes. And salaries have earned a lot of the attention on that, but it impacts everything that everyone does. How has the new CBA impacted your job as president and what you've done with the Valkyries moving forward?
Yeah, for us, you know, as they were negotiating, this was an important moment to get right. So, you know, we needed the league and the players union and supported both sides and, you know, making sure that this was something that we can continue to build on as a league. So first and foremost, we're excited about that, you know, and happy to see the growth, you know, for all parties involved so we can all continue to do this. And for me as president, you know, really what that meant was when that moment happened, we had to be ready, you know, so whether it was the end of last season or, you know, 3 weeks ago, we have been hiring into the opportunity to continue to grow. You know, whether it's doubling the size of our marketing team or making sure we're investing in the fan experience, we weren't waiting. You know, we wanted to make sure that the moment that that moment happened, that we were here to support and build the year two that built on the experience that we had last year.
So with the CBA this offseason and also having one full year of the Golden State Valkyries under your belt, how different does this offseason and preseason feel to you versus leading into the inaugural season?
Last year, you're building a lot off of before we played a game feeling, and you would get pieces of it when we would have a specific event or be speaking at a community, you know, experience that we would have. And then we had our games. And the feeling is just so overwhelming when you're looking around, talking to every single fan in the building. You're talking to game day staff and security officers. And everyone's just, like, joyful. And, you know, I think that word can't be understated enough, because when you try to just figure out, like, what am I feeling? It's just, like, actual, like, joy throughout. And it happens to be our job. And so I think what made this off season really special is that people knew that that's what we were doing. Whether, you know, you're working on it from a staff perspective, or you're showing up, you know, at a season ticket holder event, even with waiting for the CBA news, you know, you were showing up because you knew what you were showing up for and who you were showing up for. And so it's allowed us to be more confident in the moves that we're making and the growth that we're seeing. You know, we are joyfully relentless in what we do. By no means do we feel like we checked any boxes last year to which we are satisfied in any way. We can be proud of what happened, but we are not satisfied. You know, if you're talking to Ohemeh and Natalie, they're very adamant about, okay, we are still seeking that championship. We understand it's year two. The goal remains the same. If you're talking to our business team, it's how are we growing the WNBA, whether you are a fan here at the Valkyries or, you know, in other audiences as well.
For all of those pieces, and I think this is even more interesting on the business side, you know, you guys do have a relationship with the Warriors. So you have that kind of base to grow an expansion team from, if you will. Did you find a benefit in that, to having that available to you as you continue to grow this? Or do you feel like there are other benefits if you were independent?
It's an interesting question, because there's no solid answer for every market and every situation that is the same. I think often people are kind of looking to bucket, like, well, what is the better outcome here? And the reality is, somebody could follow our playbook in a different market with different circumstances and have wildly different experiences for a million different reasons. What I would say is Golden State, as an entity and this ownership group and their commitment to doing things the right way and the culture that they've built there, has been immensely beneficial. And we have folks that we can ask a million questions of that have done this at a really high capacity. But the beauty of it, you know, and I, in my interview with Joe Lacob and Peter Guber, the beauty of it is their perpetual curiosity. You know, I'm coming off of Angel City. I'm like, I don't know if I can leave Angel City for anything. And I'm sitting at the table with these two gentlemen that are storied sports owners. And their question was, how did you do that? Not, we are the Warriors and this is how you should do it. And if you look throughout history, especially when you have that opportunity to be affiliated and share a venue, which venue ownership is a benefit for sure, often you see a little too much affiliation and the brands become meshed together, right? And if you're looking at any product, let alone a sports product, people have to know who you are and what you're doing to begin to be curious about being a fan of your own. And so I think what's been really beautiful about this process is that we are Golden State. There's an immense amount of gratitude and synergy between our organizations in really cool ways. And we are building two unique standalone products. Of our 12,000 season ticket holders, only 8% cross over to the Warriors. So we are also the case study to showcase that we have built a completely unique audience for the WNBA that is what you're seeing pour into this league, that's not duplicative. And we are able to do that together. We, of course, hope every Warriors fan, even in casual nature, will become a Valkyries fan. And by the way, they also hope Valkyries fans will become Warriors fans. But that's not how we're building these two brands. Our game day experiences, much different. Both awesome, right? And so it's unique that way. And one thing I do want to touch on, because I'm really proud of this organization for how they brought the Valkyries into the fold and the leadership they showed, is things like, it's not Warrior Shop that's open 365 days a year. It's the Golden State Shop. So you can get Valkyries merch at all times, even during Warriors season. And that type of visibility can't be understated. Similar to our foundation, it evolved into Golden State Foundation. We've given over $50 million since Joe and Nicole Lacob have been at the helm of that. And then most importantly is the Warriors had the top youth academy in the NBA. We've evolved that to the Golden State Sports Academy, and it comes with reversible jerseys. So if you are a young boy or girl playing in a camp or a clinic throughout the Bay Area, you have the Valkyries and the Warriors at all times, and you see them equally. And I'm really, that societal impact of how that idolization is going to happen of our athletes is something I don't take for granted. But those are the moments where we are really strategic about how we show up together for the sport of basketball and the betterment. And they do understand the responsibility of how to show up the right way with the Valkyries, but also when the Valkyries are uniquely our own, to make sure that that fan that wants to just be a Valkyries fan has a space to do that.
I have never seen that reversible jersey before. That is such a cool idea. I love that. You mentioned how, yes, of course, you're enjoying all of the successes of year one, but a championship is still very much so the ultimate goal. I've seen a five-year plan or a five-year goal to get to a championship. 5 years sounds like a long time. It's not. Yeah, it's a blink of an eye. So what gives you confidence that you can achieve that goal? And maybe what do you feel like still needs to happen in order for a championship to come within the next 5 years?
Well, I get to be a fan like anyone else in watching this team. You know, Ohema is a peer of mine. You know, the way that we're structured is she reports directly to Joe Lacob. And so I support her in any way possible, and I'm a partner to her. But I also get to look at in awe what her and coach have put together for this year. And I'm confident in not only, you know, their skill sets, but just who they are and who they're recruiting as human beings. You know, this offseason, Gabby Williams signing with us was incredible. And, you know, you never get to choose like the background of the players, you know, that you're going after to win those basketball games. But she's from the Bay in so many ways. You know, she's part of this culture, even like how she announced it on her personal, you know, channels, had a little bit of Bay Area music. She had Mac Dre dropped, which I just like brought a tear to my eye, you know. But they're recruiting people that are just reflective of, you know, the overall culture that they're building. And that relentless want to win, you know, is apparent at all times. So I have full faith, you know, in that journey for them, and we're here to support them in every way.
You mentioned Gabby, and she's your first major free agent signing, probably in franchise history. In terms of face of the franchise, Ohema had talked last year about how she wasn't looking for that. Like, one would come out of what you guys were building in terms of culture as president, but also fan, as you mentioned. Do you feel like you have a face of a franchise now, or is that still maybe showing itself?
Our culture is always we. And, you know, there are people that are going to be a part of that that certainly are notable. And I would say last year, having Tip Hayes as a free agent was also big. You know, she's the, I believe, 36th top scorer in WNBA history, has been Sixth Woman of the Year. And that veteran leadership coming from the Aces and choosing the Bay Area and the Valkyries as a year one team, I think also set the tone of confidence. And then Gabby certainly adding to that in year two with her background as well has just been immense. For us, like, it's our job to make sure, like, we tell as many stories of these players and showcase who they are in as many ways as possible. And, you know, to Ohema's point and Natalie's point, it's always about the bigger team picture versus having a quote-unquote face of the franchise.
I know that you are wholeheartedly focused on the Golden State Valkyries and making this team on and off the court the best that it can be. But the league is better when its expansion teams are better and when more teams are better. So if you had a piece of advice to Portland and Toronto and these other expansion teams that are going to be joining the WNBA over the next couple of years, what would you tell them?
You have to know who you are, right? While there are pieces of the playbook from a formula standpoint of like how to structure an office staff and where to invest the dollars, what has made us successful is listening and being very genuine to the Bay Area, right? This is where people look to see what comes next, how we treat people. Community is imperative to, you know, how we want to make sure that we're showing up. That's ours. How we've built our color and how we spoke to our fans and what we continue to do is ours. And, you know, markets like Portland and Toronto have such unique opportunities with, you know, Portland being, you know, historic women's sports landscape market. You've got Toronto, obviously, unlocking Canada in a brand new way. Oh, and by the way, we also have Detroit, Cleveland, and Philadelphia all here before 2030. So I have so much confidence in every single one of those groups. You know, I'm in close contact with every single one of those groups and here to help. Candidly, just how many in the W in our first and second year of building outside of like playing a game, they've answered every phone call. And I think the unique thing about the W right now is that everyone is aligned in growing this league and then taking our place in that. But we understand that for us to be successful, everybody needs to be successful.
Jess, we are huge fans of Violet here on this show. We love her style. We love her glasses. Love everything about her, and love that you were able to make some time for us today. This is Jess Smith, the president of the Golden State Valkyries. Jess, thank you so much for your time, and good luck with everything this season.
Thanks, Jess.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for the work that you do, the stories that you tell, the awareness that you bring. It's really, really an important part of the growth, so I really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. appreciate Valkyrie's president, Jess Smith, for stopping by the show, giving us a behind-the-scenes look of everything that's going on in the locker room and in the front office of the Golden State Valkyries. An exciting year, too, incoming for them. Now let's transition to free agency. You know, this was one of the more intriguing free agency off seasons that we've had in this league. Pretty much everyone, if not everyone who was not signed to a rookie deal was a free agent. We've seen a lot of the chips have fallen and contracts have been signed, and players have either returned to their respective teams or they're joining other teams on their course for a championship. But there's two big names that still have yet to put pen to paper. Now, one of those is longtime WNBA veteran Tina Charles. But I would say the bigger name of somebody who has not been signed, maybe a player that has been unsigned for so long that it's led to a lot of big time question marks, and that is Natasha Cloud. Now, Natasha Cloud, most recently with the New York Liberty, she was with Phoenix before that, spent a majority of her career in Washington. There's been a lot of speculation of why Natasha Cloud has not been signed in this free agency. What are your thoughts on Natasha Cloud?
I think it was always a tough position for Natasha Cloud to be in. And mm-hmm. I say all of this without sourcing. This is all just kind of reading what has happened. I think it's a multi-pronged situation. There were team priorities on the New York side that honestly were made pretty clear way back in October when Sandy Brondello was let go, that kind of parted ways situation, and Jonathan Kolb answered some questions. And one of them was about Sabrina and about Tosh and ball handling duties. It kind of seemed like they were going to move in a different direction and put Sabrina more kind of on ball or look at that situation. So that happened a while ago. And then you look at, there's a brand new CBA, there's a brand new salary structure. And for a lot of the general managers, they did not have these numbers or the nuances available in it until we all did around March. Even the things that they were hearing, and they could maybe wrap their minds around, okay, if it's a $5 million cap, like, what does that look like? If it's a $6 million cap, what does that look like? But you don't know until you see it. So that happens in March. And then you have a shortened free agency period where general managers have talked about just how quickly they had to make decisions and turn it around. That was about a week. And what happened was a lot of players made decisions very early on because you want to have that made and you want to get into training camp. I think that is more where this lies than anything else. I do think that when something like this happens, you know, everyone has a platform now to kind of throw out, I think, what we would say are conspiracy theories for the most mm-hmm. part, or their own theories. And those gain traction and maybe aren't based in the realities of what's going on. And it becomes this main narrative that isn't necessarily based in any type of truth.
Have you heard of the theory of Occam's razor?
Yes.
The outcome or the explanation that makes the most sense is the most likely one. Mm-hmm. Now, you look at the New York Liberty, you just mentioned the turnaround, incredibly quick. And when we talked about this new CBA and how teams are going to have to make some decisions about their roster, New York was the first team that came to mind for me. And a legitimate super, super team that had two players in Brianna Stewart and Sabrina Ionescu that were more than deserving of a max, if not a super max. And then you also have Jonquel Jones. You also had Maureen Johannes, several players that were, you know, needed to be re-signed as well. That there had to have been, there has to be, you have to make business decisions. There had to be players that fell through the cracks. And looking at mm-hmm. Natasha Cloud, who was, albeit an important piece of the New York Liberty, not one of the most important pieces as one of their fifth leading scorers. And you also look at Natasha Cloud. She's what, 34 years old? Now, I'm not going to be someone to tell a player when they need to hang it up or that, you know, the best of their career is behind them. But there are general managers in the WNBA that can say that. So, you know, I don't want to diminish anything, but I do believe in Occam's razor. And a player that was a role player averaging about 8 to 10 points per game this past season on a super team that needed to pay their certified superstars who played much larger roles than Natasha Cloud did going into her 35-year-old season, that seems like a more likely rationalization to me. And it wasn't just the New York Liberty that had to make quick decisions. It was every other team in the league had to make very big decisions very quickly.
Yeah. And let's talk about timeline a little bit, because I think that's really important, too, to like put our mind as JK, as the general manager of the New York Liberty. Let's go all the way back. OK, a year ago, Bonija Laney Hamilton is injured at Unrivaled. That creates a hole in the starting lineup. New York has to do something. So what happens is they trade for Natasha Cloud shortly after. Is this a one-for-one thing? I don't think so, but it's part of it. They trade for Natasha Cloud because Natasha Cloud has been traded from Phoenix to Connecticut in a four-team trade. She doesn't want to be in Connecticut. They bring her to New York. They put her in the starting lineup. Now, let's fast forward to he has those comments at the end of the season. Maybe he doesn't really like having a true point guard next to Sabrina, wants to kind of toy with what that looks like. Coming into this season, you know that Bonija Laney Hamilton is going to come back from her injury and you want to keep her. You have Sabrina, an MVP candidate. You have Stewie, who has won MVPs and is an MVP candidate. And you have Jonquil Jones, who I think most of us have argued is probably the piece of this championship team who is often overlooked. She also has an MVP to her name. You have to pay them. They end up being paid $1.19 million, which is actually under the max, but that's what they all get. So you're looking at what else you can do. The opportunity comes up to sign Satu Sabally. And I think that's where things become really tricky. Because now you're talking with Satu. You get her pretty early. You sign her to maybe what some people call a team-friendly deal. Mm-hmm. So you just like don't have this room anymore. But also you don't have financial room to sign Natasha Cloud at what we can gather from her Instagram posts. What she wants to be signed at. You know, you mentioned her age and that she's getting older. You know, you start to take less money oftentimes because you're not the player that you were. So if you look at Natasha Cloud's salary over the past couple of years, it's been around $185,000 to $200,000, a little bit under the max. If you extrapolate that out, that's $1.05 million, which is significant on this team that has already paid its top three players $1.19 million because you want to keep them, and you're trying to fit in all of these other pieces. I mean, they have so many players on these training camp minimum payments. It just like monetarily doesn't work out. And so in this situation, if you're New York, maybe still trying to figure this out, maybe the money works, maybe you're going back and forth with her agent the first time. Well, every other team is filling out their roster in a very condensed time period because they have to. And as you said, someone just kind of gets stuck in the mud and left on the wrong side sometimes if there's not movement between them.
And that's not just a lot of money for the Liberty to pay. That would be a lot of money for any other team in the WNBA to play. North, we're talking north of $1 million here. Like I know that whenever the salary cap absolutely ballooned, that there were a lot of players, like Sophie Cunningham even came out and said that she was unsatisfied with the length of her contract and how much that she was getting paid, because I think that all of these players like had their eyes set on this massive, massive, massive north of $1 million increase. That's just not plausible or feasible for every single player in the league. So not only would it be nearly impossible for the New York Liberty to fit a north of $1 million contract, another one under their salary cap, that's a rich amount of money to pay for a 34-year-old player that averaged 8 points last year. Like that is just, it's not a smart business decision. Now, if Natasha Cloud is willing to wait out for a team to pay her what she feels like she has earned or what she deserves, more power to her. But something's got to give at some point. Either you say, I'm willing to sign for less money or a less amount of term on a contract, or you say, I am not willing to budge and I'm willing to sit at home for the entirety of the 2026 season. That just kind of looks like the two options that were faced here with Natasha Cloud.
Yeah. And this is the second CBA in the WNBA that has had these kind of accelerated jumps in money. And we kind of saw this the first time, too, where GMs and front offices are figuring out who's going to get paid what. Will superstars take a discount? You know, how do you figure this out? This is the very first year that they have this new structure, and they only had a few days to do it. To go all the way back, like, this is the most obvious answer for why Natasha Cloud is not signed. It makes a lot of sense. I don't see many holes in it.
Yeah. With that being said, though, where would make sense in your opinion? What would be a landing spot that makes sense for Natasha Cloud?
Well, to your point, it's got to be somewhere that sounds like has the money to pay her. So a significant amount. And let's like step back and say Natasha Cloud helped the Washington Mystics win that 2019 title. She's an all-star. She won the skills competition last year. Like, this is a quality player by all means.
100%.
Connecticut, but she didn't really want to play there, you know? Phoenix, but that was a messy exit. And they're really focused on Alyssa Thomas being this point forward. So I don't know if that really works. I think kind of to your point with the scoring, like, Natasha Cloud is not a strong perimeter shooter, doesn't have like high efficiency there. So you kind of have to think that. I've seen Minnesota talked about, but as we've talked about here, like, they draft Olivia Miles and they do have Courtney Williams as kind of like that veteran leader presence.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see where she ends up. And to your point about Connecticut, it's like, I know she didn't want to play there last year, but again, are you willing to sit at home if that is the only landing spot that maybe makes sense? Or if that's the team that comes a calling, are you willing to sit at home and watch the W from your couch for the sake of not playing there? Or are there certain things that Natasha Cloud is willing to negotiate on, or is, you know, willing to compromise on? We'll keep an eye on that. And of course, keep everybody updated. Natasha Cloud, Tina Charles is unsigned. Also, Erin McDonald and Sydney Colson both remain unsigned as well. Both are recovering from injuries. Sydney Colson tore her ACL late in last season. So fair to say an injury reason there, while those two still remained unsigned free agents. But we'll keep an eye on the rest of these players that have not been signed. But next week will be our last pod before the beginning of the season. I cannot believe that we are finally here. We are so close to year 30 in the W. She's 30, she's flirty, she's thriving. So be sure to come back next week. But next week, we'll have a full season preview. Some teams for us to watch, some teams that we think could drastically improve, some teams that we may think could take a step back. We'll do a full season preview next week as we lead up to the 2026 WNBA season tip-off. And as always, if you have a thought, if you disagree with one of our takes, if you're watching on YouTube, leave us a comment down below. We'll be sure to hit some of your comments, questions, concerns, all of the above on next week's edition of the pod. She's Cassandra Negley. I am Caroline Fenton. We'll see you next week. We'll